Good afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Maria Gerard.
And I am your co-host, Esther Ann.
Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Maine Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM.
Thank you for being with us here today. My name is Esther Ann. And this month, our topic is focused on Wabanaki language. Last month, we started looking at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendations, and we started with number one, which was respect tribal sovereignty. This month, we're looking at recommendation number two, which is in part, and I'll quote, honor Wabanaki choices to support healing as the tribes see fit, and celebrate the cultural resurgence of the tribes within the Wabanaki Confederacy so that both individuals and communities may be strengthened. Mm-hmm. Language is the foundation of culture. It contains our worldview, our ways of knowing and being, and their efforts to subjugate Wabanaki languages are centuries old. Yeah. And Wabanaki speakers continue to work to reclaim and revitalize our traditional languages. Yeah. Before I introduce our very special guest today, I'd like to just share a little bit of history, the subjugation of native languages in this country. And I think perhaps the most significant impact on our language came with the Indian Civilization Fund Act, which provided funding for boarding schools to remove children from tribal communities and forcibly assimilate them and also terrorize them. In 1999, the Congress passed, I mean, I'm sorry, 1990, I should wear my glasses, Congress passed the Native American Languages Act, and it recognized, quote, the status of the cultures and languages of Native Americans is unique, and the United States has a responsibility to act together with Native Americans to ensure their survival. Now, this legislation promised a lot to Native communities. They said it would preserve, protect, and promote Natives' rights to their languages. However, the promises were not delivered. Mm-hmm. Congress did update this NALA, Native American Languages Act, in 1992. But the amount that they allotted was not nearly sufficient to finance programming for all interested tribes. Again, additional financing became available in 2006 with the Esther Martinez Native American Languages Preservation Act. And still, it is not enough to really repair the harm that has been done to tribal people and tribal languages. Scott Russell, I found this quote, secretary of the Crow tribe, put it this way. He said, quote, we're educating all of our students to be non-native right now. Mm-hmm. And in this regard, the author said it seems not much has changed since the days of those residential schools. According to Ethnologue, of the 115 indigenous languages spoken in the U.S. today, two are healthy, 34 are in danger, and 79 will go extinct within a generation without serious intervention. In other words, 99% of Native American languages spoken today are in danger. So, talk a little bit about repairing of harm, and you know, there's a lot of talk lately about reparations. And I just want to, I found this information to kind of put a little bit of this in context for us. So at the height of the Indian boarding school era, between 1877 and 1918, the United States allocated $2.81 billion, adjusted for inflation, dollars to support the nation's boarding school infrastructure. Since 2005, however, the federal government has only appropriated approximately $180 million for Indigenous language revitalization. So in other words, for every dollar the U.S. government spent on eradicating Native languages in previous centuries, it has spent less than 7 cents on revitalizing them in this one.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It is. So I just wanted to set a little bit of context for what we're up against so that we can really show appreciation and gratitude for our people who are so very tenacious and so very brilliant in our approaches to revitalize our language that is not lost. As Rebecca Sogbison Penobscot, Dr. Rebecca Sogbison Penobscot says, you know, you lose your keys. We didn't lose our language. It was deliberately taken. Attempted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really appreciate you laying out some of those very powerful historical truths, and what an interesting way to look at it. You know, the time and the energy and the money that was used to eradicate the languages, and now putting back into saving the languages. And so today, while we're discussing language and language revitalization and all that revolves around that, I couldn't imagine having this conversation without our very special guest, Carol Dana. Carol has been a Penobscot language keeper and educator for a very long time. And I know, Carol, you've been instrumental in my language learning for sure. And so I want to welcome you to Dawnland Signals and invite you to introduce yourself and say a little bit about yourself and maybe how did you first get interested in doing this work and when?
Yeah, Carol Dana Jayel Alnabi Menahan Nukumas Wigwamek Widayua Widabiag Naga Widam Kadawag Naga Abadel Muag Naga Doldunkatibna Naga Alabami Nia Naga Dasodamania Dagidaman Nagamau Naga Wawaldam Dasodamania. My grandmother had friends at her house who played games and they talked the language and they laughed. And I knew they were talking about me. And I could read body language. I just said I read them, you know, but I knew when they were talking about me and I wanted to know what they were saying. And I've been talking to my friend and she's going to hypnotize me so that I'll use the language more. I have a hard time to remember to do that. And in 1980, Mudlin told me, Musa Wuguida Hazi Gutshin Jipton Tuezamodi. And I knew what she said, but I'm telling you, it took me a month to be able to say that back to her. Because of our English sounds that we have acquired, you know, there's certain sounds, and I pride myself on being around and listening. In the 80s, there were 25 speakers on the island, mostly Passamaquoddy, and I got inspired by Passamaquoddy, you know, when I lived at Dana Point in 1971 and 72 before federal housing, and that was immersion. Every house you went to, they were speaking the language. And it helps me acquire the sounds. When I hear other speakers, you know, like I was calling a cane a batahun. You know, I never heard that word before. And these guys came over and make canoes from Sidansk. And they said, abadahun. Then I knew how to say that word, you know. And I like it when I'm around other Native people and they speak it. And I've been trained in immersion with Dorothy Lazor up there at Sidonsk. And I don't remember the year, but I know you were wondering when was my best time. I really loved that training. I loved her teaching. And she told us that it's up to us to make people understand what you're saying. And I find that hard. And because the island was polarized there for a time with traditionals and the Christians, I found it hard to know who I could talk to that would be open to what I had to say. So I kind of, you know, I admit I've been quiet because other people have remarks about us speaking the language. And Daryl Kipp said, don't argue about your language. So I tend to be quiet, you know, instead of coming forthright with my language. But I have an opportunity now to do it on Zoom, and I'll take it. You know, that's what I was made for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a nice visit right here.
Yeah. I know I had to show off a little and show, yeah, I can talk Penobscot, you know, but it's so hard when people don't understand you.
I think we should model and introduce ourselves in our language.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should do that right now. In Tlewis, Estaran, Chkwabanak Yig, Deskamokari Nil, Nurebegs, Ziba Yig, Wigu Bunawabskawi.
Yeah.
My name is Esther Ann. I'm Passamaquoddy. I'm from Zibayig, and I live here with Penobscot people.
Yeah. Belal Dani Nujai Al Nabi Menahan, Wagodam Pagamk, Luyuni. I'm Carol Dana from People's Island. My clan is Fisher.
Nitchaliwizi Malia. Banawapskawi, Nujayawi, Alnabi Menahan. And I don't know what else to say. My name is Maria, and I am Penobscot from the People's Island, Alnabi Menahan. And I love that word, the People's Island, in our old word for Indian Island, Alnabi Menahan. Mm-hmm. And so that makes me think about place names and how so many place names all throughout the state, you know, bear witness to our language. And I love that it's, you know, forever embodied in the landscape like that.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that. I wrote that down. I'm glad to include that in my introduction now, so I get the place name.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you mentioned your inspiration coming from your time living with Passamaquoddy at Madakmiguk. I just wanted to say that one of our intended guests today was Dwayne Toma, who is Deskamukadi Passamaquoddy, and doing some really amazing language work for his community. And unfortunately, he could not be with us today. There was a death in the community of an elder at Pleasant Point, Cleve Door. And Cleve was a chief in the 90s, and he passed away this weekend. And so one of the customs that we have in our tribal communities is when somebody passes away, that all business, all actions sort of cease, and all the attention is directed towards the passing of that relative. So Dwayne couldn't be with us today, but we'll be sure to brag him up, because he's definitely you know, a great individual doing great work. And Carol, we were having a conversation just yesterday, and you were talking about how, you know, Dwayne's always been there, he's always been involved, and that you remembered him from when he was just a little one living across the street from you.
Yes. I remember him, and I'm so proud of him and his work, and I can understand most of what he says when he's talking. I tune in when I can, too, because Wayne Newell told me that. He said, when we were up your way, we spoke Penobscot, and when you came down here, you spoke Passamaquoddy. And I remember Sanabi talking about his grandmother who knew six languages, Passamaquoddy, Maliseet, Mi'kmaq, Penobscot, English, and French. And you had to know those languages in order to get along. Now just look at that, how much you had to know and remember in your mind and learn. And you think of all the medicines that we knew. I have 16 pages of plant names from the dictionary in the language that I, you know, put together. And it amazes me, it continues to amaze me to think that we knew that. And another thing I've learned from the stories was in the time of cholera, I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, this man had a dream about a being who showed him where to get this root, and it was flag root. And he said, take this and make a tea out of it for your people so they'll get better. And that was Musquashawapsk, which Frank didn't have in the dictionary. He had a cattail. So I was real grateful to get that piece and realize that, you know, that's what we called it as the Passamaquoddies, but they say Gihazawapsk. But we could call it Musquashawapsk for the muskrat root.
Gihazawapsk.
Yeah, we say Musquashawapsk.
Musquashawapsk.
Yeah, it's the same idea. And that's how our knowledge came to us. You know, we're so out of touch with how we were and who we were back in the day. You know, but I had a dream about a medicine and I started taking it too. My iron was real low and this nurse was telling me, oh, that doesn't help. You shouldn't be taking that. I said, well, I dreamt about it. I'm taking it.
Yeah.
You know, wow. It helped me. It was that yellow dock. It helps you with your blood and your iron. So I doctored myself and I felt good that I had dreamt that, you know. So I think, I know we've had a lot of people come through here that said, your culture isn't lost. You trip over it every day, you know, but we have such a loss here on the East Coast, and it's amazing we have what we do. And I know other Indians criticize us because we have a written system, but Steve crashed and said, if you can read in your language, you can speak it. And what I call it is being literate in your language. Grateful that I was listening and that I continue to listen to people speaking. And I put it together with those written words when I worked for Siebert in 1982 or 81. They didn't even hire me at first. They hired some gal from Connecticut. And I wanted that job, but they realized their mistake, I guess, and they brought me in. And I always felt like I was a bridge from the community to that department. And, you know, I've continued on that trail all this time and I've gotten a lot of encouragement. And you know how they're always saying, oh, the last speaker, the last this, the last that.
Yeah. Well,
you know, that's so typical of what they do to us, what they've been trying to do to us. And I admit it's my resistance to be able to speak my language today, because I know what happened. Elders told me they got rapped on the knuckles with rulers for speaking their language. And, you know, that's where we lost it. And also, Frank told me that the state was putting restrictions on our people. This was at the turn of the century. And they had to come down from those islands because that's where they were making a go of it up there, hunting and trapping. And they had to move.
When you're talking about Frank, you're talking about
Frank Siebert.
Okay. And what was he again? He worked for the tribe, for the Penobscots. And what was his role?
Well, he got a grant under NEH, but he had scads of notebook full of Penobscot. And Eunice Bowman Nelson knew that. And they hired him. And he would have been a witness or testify for us had we gone to court under the land claims. You know, he would be there to say, this is us and this is our language and yes, whatever.
So Frank was like an anthropologist back in the 60s and 70s, right?
No, he was an armchair linguist. He was a doctor of pathology, but for some reason he took an interest in here And he had been around here in the 1930s, and he was writing the language down. He talked to a lot of our people, the Stanislaus at Lincoln Island, Louis Lola, Susie Dana, you know, Andrew Dana was a big one for him, Louis Lola, a lot of them helped him, and thank God for what he did. And we don't have to accept everything he said. Yes, he made mistakes, and I'm learning a lot talking to Connor Quinn, like Connor knew, you know, what he did. Like, everyone has a filter, right? He tried to regularize and standardize our language. But Deanna told me that even at the point that different families talk differently, and that diversity, that's good. You know, there's no standard language. And
I love this conversation. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change in the Dawnland. I'm your co-host, Esther Ann.
And I'm your co-host, Maria Gerard. And joining us today for this conversation is special guest Carol Dana, Penobscot language keeper and educator. Carol, you said something earlier about speaking language was your resistance. Mm-hmm. And so that my ears perked up when you said that. And I just wanted to talk a little bit more about language and language learning and language reclamation as an act of healing and of resilience.
Yes.
Because that, you know, that feels good.
Yes. Well, I had the idea. We're in a strange position here at Bunawapskeag where our mother tongue is our second language. So I got the notion that second language learning methodologies would help us with Penobscot. And I talked to someone on campus in the Intensive English Institute and gave me a lot of ideas and ways, you know, to go about it. And I developed my own philosophy of teaching and learning. And I read Stephen Krashen when I went to university, because I had stopped working with Frank in 85 and went back to college. I graduated in 1990. And I wasn't totally ready to speak it then either. Like I said, the old lady told me that phrase and I understood her. I just couldn't say it that well. But I feel, you know, I've been on this road long enough, I can do it. And I'd like to. You have to have a discerning mind. Let me finish that thought about Frank. Frank gave us a snapshot of a language, you know, at that time. And when I hear Edwina Mitchell talk about a Jalila, and it could be used this way, could be used that way, you could say this about it and that. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much more to this. So I put my stock and my faith in other speakers too and what those words mean. And I don't accept everything. I guess I question it, and you have to have a discerning mind to tell what's what about the language. And I think I've always been that way, curious and wanting to learn. And I've been in this, well, conscious decision at age 15 to speak the language, to know the language. I started with my grandmother and my old aunt, Aunt Ella, because I made a mistake and they had a good laugh at me. But it was a learning moment. But there's a lot of that joking, and I'm kind of sensitive, you know, probably a little too sensitive at times to people. And I just tend to stay quiet when things get to me. But I need to learn to be sassy.
I like that too, Carol, in learning the language. And I like how you said that discerning mind, because I'm always thinking, okay, what did our ancestors think about that at that time, and how were they interacting with that? That's why I think it's so interesting, the different words for the same thing that we have between our languages.
Yeah.
Like the word for an animal, say, name one. Yeah. So the that animal and the passamaquoddy word is one word. And the Penobscot word is a different word, but they're just talking about the same animal and how they perceive it and how they interact with it. And I think that's, it's so, our language is so brilliant.
Yes.
Yes.
And can you imagine knowing six languages? How brilliant is that?
and not, it's like the key, almost like I, when you said that woman knew six languages and how people had to know that to, mm-hmm. to be together, to live together. And it makes so much sense because our language, it encapsulates everything, right? Yeah. You can't have there's like the inseparable language and culture.
Yes, they are. When you teach language, you teach culture, and I'll be talking to that. And you have to decolonize your mind, too, because days of the weeks, right? Monday, I'm Squasalukamik, first day of work. Back in the day, you had to work every day if you wanted to live. That was no first day of work. That was working for the man. And then is Mundu. Mundu is an evil spirit. There's no evil spirit. And then he has a Ginhandwi Nugwazu, Great Caesar's Ghost. That isn't what that word means. To me, it's a great power, it looks like.
And you know what else I think of, Carol? I think of Frank Siebert and the others who have researched the language and our sense of humor and how many times we might have been joking around and making fun and misleading people and telling them that one word means something else. Like when I was a kid, we told our teacher that Nuzuggan meant hero, and he went around the school saying that he was a Nuzuggan just to play a joke on it. But I know, you know, I wonder how much of those things are still through that filter of the person who's doing the research, and they don't have that same worldview. So you're right to have this discerning mind, because that person's only capturing that one moment in time, right?
Right, and there's so much more to it because the language is so rich and variegated and used in different contexts. You know, like Arnie Neptune asked me how to say, make me a channel. He wanted me to translate that St. Francis prayer, and I said, if I told you make me a channel, I'd be talking about digging something out on the earth. You know, some things aren't directly translatable. And they did that in prayer sometimes, too.
That was one thing that always interested me in language learning, was how the language is so description-based.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly translatable. And, for example, the word aguiden, we would use that as the word for canoe, but that is actually referring to something that floats lightly on the water. So other things could be aguiden as well.
Edelaguamuk is our word for kitchen, but you're not saying just kitchen. You're saying where there is cooking. Mm. Very descriptive. Bisundasik, what they call a window. What you're saying is that which lets the light shine through. It's so poetic. I just love it. You know, I love words anyway. You know, I write poetry and I love the rhythm of them and how they are. So I think that's why I gravitated to language too. I just love it. And once you get the rhythm of it down, you can say it, because you know them words are yay long. Like one word can be a whole phrase, you know. Mm-hmm. What's so neat about the language?
It is.
Beautiful to listen to, you know, the flow of it.
I really, in all of my language learning journey, I'm always amazed and just like how just perfect it is. I mean, to think of animate and inanimate, that things are called different things depending on how you're interacting with them, and that's that action again. Yeah. It just makes so much sense. And then when you look at it in comparison to some other languages, like English is really complicated. You know, the spellings and the different meanings and the things that sound the same. And
I like is Bisquasawasik for flower, but you're saying that which bursts forth.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that word when you were saying long words. We must be on the telepathy line as well, Carol.
Yeah, Bisquasawaskil is the plural. Yeah.
Or Memjinusas.
Favorite word?
Huh?
Does anyone have a favorite word? I always say I have a favorite word. and it's Joganiganug. For dumplings. I love to say that.
You remind me of that song I was trying to write, and Madonna had to help me. She'll be coming around the mountain.
Yes, because she'll be chewing Nook Magadagan when she comes.
Lipless Kids used to sing that. And,
I love it.
When she was coming, that no one that starts singing, she'll be coming around the mountain. So I wrote that in Penobscot for her. And I don't sing it much, but I was making a CD of all the songs that I made up, but then the money dried up. So I'll do it on Zoom, but I can do it now with help from Madonna, because I'll borrow a word. If we don't have it in Penobscot, I'll borrow it from Passamaquoddy and Maliseet.
Nice. That's what we always did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know this. Some words I love. I think I gravitate to the words that are relevant to my life or that I love more than some, like I like Delugadeh Waganal clothing.
Delugadeh Waganal.
Yeah. Madeline would say it real slow like that. Delugadeh Waganal. And Madonna goes, Delugadeh Waganal. So I couldn't keep up if I heard fast talkers. But, you know, we can go slow and we can go one word at a time. We'll get there. I'm just a small part in the link that of what's going to happen, I hope, anyway. You know.
So. This reminds me, I in doing some reading on the internet and looking at what other tribal communities have been doing around language revitalization, I found this story of a Spokane tribal elder, Pauline Flett. She's 95 years old. Mm-hmm. She's one of three completely fluent Salish speakers in her tribe. Mm-hmm. She says she doesn't stop working until she feels she's done enough for the day, sometimes working past midnight. And she says that revitalizing a language is daily work. I'm addicted to it. She says, if you're meant to do it, that's what it is. And I feel like I was meant to do this. She often uses prayers and songs to help teach the language. Yeah. She's currently working on a Spokane dialect version of Amazing Grace. Oh. It's a good trick for getting other people interested in speaking the language, she says, because it invites them to join in. Even just one little prayer, just do that, and pretty soon you'll be adding to it, she says. If you learn in a language and you see how others speak, pretty soon you're doing it too.
Yeah,
I thought that was so beautiful. Like you said, just one, you know, even... Yeah. Replacing see you later with upjich. You know, when you're getting off a phone call, just one little thing that you can start replacing those English words.
Right, yeah. My kids say that to me now. We shortened it to me notch because we never said goodbye. We always said see you again later. And over my door, I've got I'll nod away at askisku. Speak the language every day. I talk to my dog. He knows a few words. So
I have signs everywhere, Carol, in my house, in my bathroom, in my kitchen. You open my cupboard, I've got signs everywhere. So I can just keep saying those words as I'm doing these activities, you know, all day. It helps me.
I've got some around here, and Gabe had put up some stickers. I'm not the only one in language here. Gabe Paul does a wonderful job, and he knows Maliseet and Passamaquoddy and Chigwaha Gabe, you know, he stayed with us ever since 2001 down the old school. And he's on that road. And I said, I can die peacefully now, Gabe. I'm there.
And he's teaching Kinu.
Yeah.
He's teaching, they're teaching the baby. That is so beautiful.
Yeah.
That warms my heart.
I know, right? Me too. Makes me feel good. I miss Native people. I was listening to Deanna and Muglet there on a CD one day. They were talking and singing, and when I came out of my room, I stopped talking to Josh and Chris in the language. I couldn't help it. You know, it just gave me that extra support or whatever, encouragement that, yeah, this is our language, you know. It's so beautiful.
You know, it's interesting when you were talking earlier about how everything is just here. We're tripping over it, right? It's here in front of us. And I've seen a lot of people, you know, I've been home since this COVID. I haven't gone anywhere, but interacting on social media, especially a lot of people have been saying, and a lot of my friends been yeah. saying that they feel a lot closer to their people who have passed.
Yes.
And so they're closer to the land. People are going out more, gardening more. And, yep. and I think that's bringing us closer to the language too.
Yes, I hope so, because I have a lot in this Zoom that I'm going to do, maybe 40 minutes. And I hope to reach people. There'll be 300 openings there for people. And I hope they come on in, and I hope I make it comfortable enough and easy enough for them to feel like they can do it. You know, my knowledge is basic. I couldn't rattle on for too long in Penobscot, but I can give them what I have, you know. And I know that the Net Passamaquoddy helped me. And when I went to Akwesasne, language was there every day among people in the longhouse, in the opening prayer, in their songs. And that was inspiration for me too. And I remember reading in Akwesasne notes to let a language die from the face of the earth, you know, is a travesty. And all these things is what keeps me going. It's fuel for my fire. Like I said, there's been little messages and milestones for me on this journey. And my neighbor pities me. You're going to work till you're 70. I said, I want to work till I'm 70. I'm working for that extra $500. I said, and I'm so happy to do Zoom. This is what I was made for, you know, so I can't wait to do this. I've been compartmentalized in our life. I feel bad. My kids don't know it, but I wasn't ready to talk it in the 80s. They were going to school. I was going to college, and I don't know. I've just been kind of shy, I think, to come out with it. Well, now I'm not. I'm older and I've been in it long enough. You know, some people question me, and I had to come home. They said, how do you get to do this? And I was sitting in my armchair thinking, I've only been in it 53 years, my dear. That's
how I know I certainly appreciate it, Carol. Yes. I know I certainly appreciate it so much. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Maria Gerard, along with co-host Esther Ann. And with us today is a very special guest, Carol Dana, Penobscot language keeper and educator. And today we're talking about language revitalization. Edgy week with Jayig.
Edgy week with Jayig.
And I just mentioned quickly that WERU helped me also. Gray came up through Emma Finn, and they recorded me reading the Transformer Tales. This was a long time ago, and they were very encouraging to me. And my grandson, Keanu, heard me talking on the radio, and he goes, that's Grammy's language.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was just a moment, you know. And I've taught them a few phrases here and there because I watch them. But, you know, it could have been more. And I think now that I'm older, too, I want it to be more. You know, I want
Can you say a little bit more about the Transformer Tales, Carol?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We're finishing up. Oh, my God. You send that to the publishers. It's a language recorded by Frank Speck from Nua Lion in 1918. And Nua Lyons died in 1919, but it's like 31 stories or 21. And then Margot found 8 or 9 we didn't know we had in the language. Karna Quinn has put it in our official written system that we have. And I have such a hope in that because Krashen said, if you can read in a language, you can speak it. And I mentioned something about what I really want to do when I retire is make little books for children. But these will be 2 books, 2 volumes of Penobscot and English.
Nice.
Till they're
I'm really excited for those.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be soon. It's been, you know, merging, like giving birth.
Yeah. Now, wasn't there also a play that was done on the Transformer Tales?
Yeah. Yeah, National Park Service made some money available, and you were there, Marie. We tried to decide what we're going to do with it, and I kept telling Margot, do this, it's all set. All you have to do is script it up. So I don't know what happened to everybody. Kind of pooped out, but we went ahead with the play, and I said, let's do it in the language, because we had talked in theater about doing language, and that's what we did. They recorded me saying certain lines, and we kept some of them, you know, in Penobscot, because there they were right there. And we had to get over some stuff amongst ourselves and them, you know, stereotypes about Indians. And we got through it, though. And I did it because we needed some good PR for us, because there was so much bad press in the news about us. Had to do with the river and all that. And otherwise, I don't think I would have done it. But everything lined up, and there we were. And the kids enjoyed it. And it's good PR, like I said, for them to know we have a language, we're still here. We're in Penobscot Theater. You know, so we all had a good time. I really liked it. I feel valued as a person, you know, when people ask me to do things like that. And I enjoy it.
And there's so much, you know, as we're sitting here talking about it, you know, like one project after another, there really is so much. And one thing that I was thinking about most recently that happened, and I believe you were involved in, was the signage at the University of Maine in Orono.
Yeah,
me and we finally have some language on the signage.
Yeah, Gabe Paul did a big part of that. He's good. You know, he's good in those finer details and spelling. And I did some and he did some. So that was good.
That's wonderful. It's so nice to, you know, walk on campus and come across a sign that, you know, has Penobscot language represented. It feels really good to see that.
I know, right?
Great piece of work.
There have been, I have noticed in our communities that there's been a lot more attention paid to using language in our own communities, in our programs. And one example is my day job. I have the honor of working around the Indian Child Welfare Act, and we have a Protect the Children initiative. And there are all these different roles that community members can serve to help be part of this circle of protection for children in care, in foster care. But some of the terms are real, they're kind of like a turnoff, like qualified expert witness or, you know, respite care provider. So we did a lot of work in connected with Passamaquoddy, Penobscot, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, and trying to find words in the languages that really talk about the essence or describe what that role is. Like, you know, what a foster parent would be in our language and things like that. So, and it's, I think, you know, I like to think that it's having an impact because we can connect it, you know, protecting children that act and having these roles to this, you know, this way of knowing and being in our language and in our culture. So I see that a lot.
Yeah, that's the way it was. You know, we took care of each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like the words in, you know, our language. They're more gentle. And, you know, if we spoke our language, we'd be more at peace, I believe. And there'd be less friction. You know, our language is beautiful when we speak it.
It really is.
I like the story that Roger Paul talks when he explains the word dupwan, which is soil, and how in the English language, dirt, you know, there's this connotation about dirt, dirty.
Yeah.
And in our language, it's the source of life and how different a perspective that is when you're looking at the soil,
you know,
something that's dirty or contaminant or something that is the source of life.
Yeah, because he says it's the cells of our ancestors. Yeah, I know, I'm glad he teaches that to the kids. That's a good one. Yeah. Fertility and growth. Yeah. A lot of that, you know, it's a different way to see the world. And like I said, it would be too bad to let it all die. I know some people like to say Penobscot's dead, but I don't think so. You know,
we have not on your watch anyway, right?
That's right. That's right. Connor said something the other day, like, don't let the fire go out. I said, well, I surely didn't. He said, wouldn't that be great on a T-shirt to say that in Penobscot?
Keep the pump fires burning.
Yeah. Don't let the fire go out. Yeah. So
we have about 10 more minutes together. Mm-hmm. It always amazes me how quickly the time passes. So I just wanted to be mindful of our time together. And so another 10 minutes to talk about language and language revitalization and language is healing. Anything more that we, like, what do we want to share?
I'd like to give a little shout out to the work that Duane's doing. Between the three of us, maybe we can represent it well.
My healing song too. I made that up from the language.
Oh yeah, you've sung that for me before. Yeah. Do I want to put you on the spot and see if you want to share it?
Yeah, I'll share it.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay.
Do pegel enigma. Would you come on, enigma? Oh, when a wagiga, Me quit a ham in a gun, Susa.
And I think that's where the healing comes in. I know they used to have pretty heated council meetings, and Jerry Francis said someone would get a powder horn out. And they'd sing a song to mend that up if they had an argument. So I have this feeling about people being very peaceful, diplomatic, and they didn't like that when things, you know, went kind of off course or whatever. And that was the healing, to sing that song. And I know myself, I feel like I've had a great healing through the years, and it came out in that song. That song kind of wrote itself, and it makes me feel better, this work I'm doing, and hopefully heal other people too, you know. And
I love that so much. Thank you so much for sharing your song, Carol. I think you brought the thunder, because just as soon as you finished singing, I could hear the rumble of thunder out there.
They say, "Wichka wila musum sanawak badagia." Here comes our grandfather thunders.
Yes, absolutely.
Singing is such an important tool to our language preservation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easier to sing it sometimes than to say it.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what I convey to people. Yeah. Thank you, girls. It's been fun. And thank WPRU for putting me on the air back in the day and Transformer Tales, and now we'll have a book for everybody.
Full circle.
That was wonderful. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, full circle. I love that story that you shared about WERU. That's really.
I have to thank Gray and Emma Finn.
So we're coming to the close of our show. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for joining us today, Carol. Yeah. And for your life work around language. I couldn't imagine where we would be today if not for all your work over all those years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say thank you to the listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. Let's see. What am I missing, Esther?
Wanted to say that I know I rattled off a lot of facts at the beginning of the program, and if people are really interested, you can email me somehow. I'm sure you can find my address somewhere or through the site station, maybe. And if you want, since Vogue Signals, if people want the sources for where I got all that information, if people are interested in looking into it further, I'd be happy to share that. Just to know that I'm so grateful for everything that Carol has done over the years I think about it like this big tree and all these roots and all the seeds you've planted in so many people. And I see it happening everywhere. There's songs being revitalized, young people that are doing videos online, doing the language, a word of the day or a phrase, and it's so beautiful. And you've been such a part of that over all these years. And I'm just so grateful for you and all of our other teachers. And hopefully someday we'll be able to get Duane on, huh?
Yes.
To hear about the wax cylinders and the songs that he's preserved from Passamaquoddy.
Yes.
Yeah, we forgot to say a little bit about what it is that he is doing. And so what had happened is that Duane Toma worked alongside Passamaquoddy travel historian Donald Soctoma to revitalize songs that had not been heard in a long, long time. They were recorded on wax cylinders, and they were some of the earliest recordings ever done on wax cylinders. And so Duane is just, perfect for doing that type of work because he really enjoys performing, and he really enjoys, really celebrating the revival of that voice, that's been so long lost.
In our relatives, our relatives across this U.S. imaginary border in New Brunswick, Lostogweag, I'm saying it right, I think, Maliseet, there's a young man, Jeremy Dutcher, who's a classically trained Canadian opera singer who has done the same thing, taken some of the old recorded Maliseet songs, and he's worked with Muggalid, Maggie Paul, to record them. And it's just so beautiful to see all of this work happening across Wabanaki land.
Yeah. Andrea Bear Nicholas shares some stuff with me now and then, stories in the language. Only thing, they couldn't get the sound. They have soundtracks of people speak it in Maliseet, and they couldn't get them. But I got the book of stories, which I think was too bad because that's a treasure right there. I don't know what the holdup was, but
It is
back. Those are all treasures. They'll come back eventually.
Well, we are almost out of time. Is there any last words you want to leave us with, Carol, before we say Ukjidge?
No, just that I think I wanted us to be on a par with the other tribes. People made fun of us when we didn't have our language. They make fun of us as we're trying to get our language, and I want to have us have our real stuff about who we are, and this is it. Elnadaway, Bunawapske, Wadaway. We just want to be accepted amongst everybody else, and be with them.
And it's interesting because what I learned from a teacher was that Penobscot is the root, has the root of our other languages. The other languages come from it. So
Cree, Ojibwe, the Ojibwe remember being here, and they got that eighth generation or eighth fire.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come back, they're going to ask people, are you on the spiritual road or the material road?
Mm-hmm.
It may lead to the lighting of the eighth fire or not. So it's very rich. I think we feel alone and small, but if you look into the language and you see the connection. We're connected to the Cree. We're connected to the Ojibwe. We're all connected as Wabanaki here. And we have a lot of relatives out there. So that makes you feel empowered and strengthened.
It's heartwarming. I visited Anishinaabe people, and they were so grateful for us. They said, "You know, thank you for being here. Your people are there, your descendants." And yeah. They were so happy that we were there to visit, you know, so grateful that we are still here, and we've done everything to, you know, they're, I have met natives across the country like that, that are grateful for what we've sacrificed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Carol. Chiwoliwone.
Chiwoliwone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now I think we've come to the close of our time together. It's kind of funny because we're pre-recording this show, and so we have to keep track of the time, and, you know, we record for exactly 58 minutes, and I was off a couple times, and Esther's saying, no, not yet. So now I think we're going to close up. And so I want to say, Chiwoliwone, thank you to the listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. Chiwoliwone, thank you to our very special guest, Carol Daner, for the enlightening conversation. Chiwoliwone, thank you to our volunteer extraordinaire, Jeffrey Hotchkiss, for technical assistance and support. And be sure to join us next month, September 17th and every third Thursday of the month for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Be sure to stay tuned here on WERU-FM. Minach Kanemiel Naga Apchich.
Minach Kanemiel Ba.
Apchich Kanemiel.